bang, bang.
Hello, and welcome to Fangbangers Podcast. We're chaotic horny friends rewatching the second season of the chaotic horny HBO series True Blood. I'm Lozzie.
I'm Melissa.
I'm Elise.
And I'm Tasia.
This week we're discussing Season 2, Episode 1, Nothing But the Blood. This episode originally aired on the 14th of June, 2009. It was written by Alexander Wu and directed by Daniel Minahan.
And our summary from Wiki, the staff at Malotte's are on edge when they find the body of a woman who turns out to be Tara's fake exorcist in a parked car with her heart torn out. Now that Bill has turned Jessica Hamby, I didn't know that that was her surname, okay, into a vampire, she is living with him and he is trying to teach her their own unique code of ethics. Suki isn't too sure she likes the fact that Bill has this young, attractive woman living with her. But their own relationship and emotions are too strong to set aside. Tara is still living in Marianne's luxurious house, and she continues flirting with Eggs, who is also there. Marianne has a few choice words for Tara's mother, when they meet. It also turns out that Sam Malotte and Marianne have quite a history together, and Sam tries to make amends. Marianne has her own ideas, however. Jason Stackhouse, who found religion while temporarily in jail, now considers going off to Texas for a church-run leadership seminar. So, welcome back, everyone, and we missed you, Tasia, for the finale.
Yes, we did.
I know, I'm so sad that I missed it. I had all my notes and everything, and it just, you know, grad school caught up to me.
Boo. Boo school. Fat.
Boo.
Just,
boo school.
Just kidding, we're pro school here.
I mean, boo school is fair.
Yeah.
So what are everyone's first impressions on this episode? And Elise, you are the first who's written stuff in the document, so we'll go with you.
Terry Belfleur, MVP.
Yes.
It's true.
Co-signed.
Yeah. Besides that, I mostly was, like, annoyed. I hate the, like, Bill and Suki are maybe going to break up, fake out stuff. Like, I'm not interested in that. And
they have to tease it.
Yeah, I know.
And they have to.
Miss Jeanette's dead face was way scarier than I remembered. It looked horrifying. That's really all.
Yeah, what I remember about season two is, like, horror. It is, like, genuinely scary. I feel like it'll be fun to go through it again.
Yeah, I would definitely remember genuine scariness. I just watched this and went, everyone's hair is so much cleaner. It's so much bigger.
They got a better budget, I guess.
Sucky's
Bill no longer looks like... Yeah, Suki's hair is great. Bill no longer looks quite as dead as he used to, so maybe some of that Suki blood is doing him good.
Eric is like in process of his hair upgrade, literally in the text of the episode.
Yes, it is remarkable. Everyone's hair everyone's hair gets a bit more budget this season.
This isn't obviously like a first impression of the episode. It's just a reaction to the summary from Wiki. But I just take issue with them saying that Sookie's problem with Jessica living there is that she's attractive. Like, I don't necessarily think that Sookie is like insecure about Jessica being attractive once she finds out that like she's a 17-year-old girl. She's a baby vampire. Like, the problem is obviously the sneaking and the lying.
For like 2
random
seconds,
user who wrote this.
Yeah, for like 2 seconds when she first sees her like in her towel, like I think maybe that is a concern, right. But that's not the main
concern.
I
agree. It's actually
I don't think there's ever been less sexual tension in any show than between Bill and Jessica. It does not exist.
Ew, old. Oh, God.
Tasia, what about you?
So, I mean, what I really noticed about this is, I guess, because what I remember of True Blood and what we saw in season one, like, you know, the season openers and the season closers, I remember as always being very punchy. I mean, all of True Blood is pretty much really punchy. So I went in expecting that, like, high level of punchiness, of, like, hitting the ground running, it wasn't a bad episode, but it wasn't performing to that height that I was kind of expecting from True Blood at this point. So, it felt more like a lot of catching up and like play setting than really getting going on the new plot stuff. So it was a slower start than I expected, but not, it's not a bad episode. It's just, it's an episode.
I think the really interesting there is they spent like the last two or so episodes, or spent quite a bit of the last two episodes of the first season setting up this season. So it is kind of strange that they then go, or also our premiere is going to be doing a bunch of setup. I mean, I agree. Like, I enjoyed this episode a lot, but it is a little bit table setting. I agree.
I think when the episode first starts and it's just moments after the finale ends, it's really exciting because it's like, oh, hell yeah, we're like right back in it. But then I do agree there's kind of a plateau there because the episode doesn't exactly keep up with that excitement. And there's obviously a lot to come that's exciting in this season, but I tend to agree that this episode isn't as exciting as like those first few moments of getting back into the world of True Blood.
Yeah, I really think that's what it is that like it has such a punchy opening. And it had me thinking while I was watching it, I was like, man, should we be reading like also the cold opens? Because they're also like very, you know, in line with like the cliffhanger endings. And then it sort of immediately like taps the brakes after that. So I was like, oh, you know, so I think maybe that was kind of like a surprise, like slowdown after that opening that had me like, oh, okay, well, this was an episode, I guess.
I was going to say it kind of reminds me of the season premiere of the season two premiere of The Sopranos, because that is a very big setup episode where like everyone's just like, it's setting up where everyone is since we last saw them. And this felt very similar to that.
I do I genuinely reflect on what was the point of all of the seeding in season one if we're then going to like table set so much in season two. I mean, I don't know, maybe we're getting a little bit nitpicky, or maybe I'm getting a little bit nitpicky and down on it because I really enjoyed the episode, right?
Oh yeah, I had a great time.
I'm gonna just say, and I don't think it's a spoiler to say this, there are two main storylines in this season, so I think maybe they're just like wanted to get a head start on one of them, and then like soon we'll see the other one come up.
Yeah, because the show goes through so much plot, it would be hard to get like two full stories through in 12 episodes when like if every episode had to be fully focused on two whole things, you know?
Yeah.
In conclusion, let's all get high and eat tropical fruit by the pool.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sounds good.
Yeah. I kept thinking the whole time, I was like, I know Marianne is like scary mystery lady, but I also really want that life. Like I'm in, you know,
like I don't care.
Yeah, like, and this is how I know I would fall victim to a cult, because I'm like, you've got weed and tropical fruits by the pool. Like I'm in. I don't care.
And hot,
like,
what's happening? Men.
Right. Yeah. It's like, okay, say less. I'm
and
there.
And hot man. And you tell my bastard mother to go fuck herself. Basically.
Yeah.
Speaking of the bastard mother, Marianne's house, and the hot man.
Perfect transition to plot one, which is Tara Eggs and Marianne. So, Elise, go.
I have forgotten that Tara tells Lady May the truth about Miss Jeanette. And I kind of just, like, I fucking hate Lady May, but I honestly just feel like Tara's life is better when Letty Mae's not drinking, so I was like, just don't tell her. It's fine.
Yeah.
Anytime I see the actress that plays Tara's mother, it's just Tara's mother. It's always Letty Mae. Like, the performance, even though she's a despicable person, like, the character is great. The performance is incredible. And her asking, you know, on the verge of a breakdown in the police station, like, ain't I still right? Like, aren't I still not drinking? Like, is that this isn't changed because Miss Jeanette was a fraud or was dead, you know? Once she gets her bearings in that idea, she turns right immediately back into an asshole. But that, like, one real moment of vulnerability from her is, like, actually quite heartbreaking.
Yeah.
Yeah, or my perspective is someone died and she's making it about her.
Yeah. I mean, like... That's fair too.
Sorry,
I think
I have zero tolerance for.
I really love. I mean, I think we all love how once the scene in the police station is over, and obviously, Tara told the police eventually after Sookie told her to that she knew Miss Jeanette, and it was really interesting. I was I was watching the episode with Tessa last night, and she was like, this show does not understand, like, the dynamic between Black people and the police.
No.
At all.
No.
Tara should not have to tell them anything she doesn't want to.
The whole time I was sitting there like, why? Why? Because she tells them, and then they don't even believe her. They're like, oh, yeah, sure, lost in the woods. It's like, why? Yeah. There's no point.
Yeah.
There's no way to trace. There's no paper trail there. Yeah. So why?
And especially
why tell?
After
why
Tara
tell?
Just got a DUI and spent a night in that police station. Like, mm-hmm. No.
Yeah.
Like, I believe Sookie saying, oh, you have to tell them, you know that. But then I do not believe Tara being like, okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah, I agree. I just think that.
Yeah, and the shittiness of the way that the shittiness of the police response to Tara is exactly why she wouldn't do it.
Like,
right?
They shouldn't even let Andy in that room. Like, I understand that he like makes him leave eventually, but like, he's drunk and he's off duty. Like, he should not be there.
But they're all awful. Like, the
and Tara was nice.
I can't
Andy
remember
earlier.
The police.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
the police lady whose name I forgot.
Kenya,
who pulled Tara over, also doesn't believe her. Right? Mm-hmm. Like, Anyway,
I wonder if they believe her once her mom comes in and is like, Miss Jeanette. Yeah, that's
calling her
person.
Miss Jeanette. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it, what so. I wanted to say that, but I also was trying to get at how much we all loved when Marianne finally meets Letty Mae and, like, tells her off to her face and, like, Letty Mae, like, thinks that she's about to say something really nice to her and then, like, bombs
off. Because she's like, I've been so excited to meet you.
It's so good.
It's wonderful.
I haven't smoked a cigarette in 2 years, but I needed one after that.
Yeah. Yeah, I've said, yeah, it's a good aftercare. We can all wrap ourselves up in cuddly, mm-hmm. cuddly, warm, warm post-coital bliss with that.
I'm just like at this vision of like post-sex needing to watch the scene where Marianne tells Letty Mae off.
But you've already orgasmed. What more can you get?
Tara also gets to know Eggs a little bit more, and it's cute when she's like, have you and Marianne, you know, like, she's worried, and he's like,
I'm so glad she asked this. We were all thinking it. We needed to know the answer. Like, it's honestly a plot hole that they haven't fucked, but I'll take him at his word.
But I also feel like...
I was like,
they've
definitely fucked.
I feel like
the answer to that is definitely yes, but maybe he just... doesn't know. I don't know.
If she fucked baby
exactly
Sam, she has definitely fucked Eggs.
Exactly. Like, if you're Marianne and you're willing to do that to baby Sam, how are you going to be in the same room with a man who looks like Eggs and not pull some shit?
Yeah, that's fair. I have more to say on that, but we can put that in the spoiler section, I think. But I am just also proud of Tara for like wanting to know information and just asking it. Like, I'm just proud of her because it furthers her getting what she wants, which is to be closer with him, and I think that's, it's good that she asked him that. I was a little proud of her.
I think that like early season one Tara would have just assumed that they had been resentful about it and then like never had a conversation with Eggs again.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's like the absence of games and the absence of like wanting to assume the worst and let herself get bitter about it, where she's just gonna be like, you know, I'm not gonna play this game with my own brain right now. I'm just gonna come out and be like, hey, is this a thing? Is it not a thing? Can we move past it?
And this is something that happens when you, or that can happen, or when you have a support system, so you're not constantly questioning everything in your life because there are people that care about you and are supporting you. So like, what's the worst that can happen, honestly? If she finds out, like, that's not that big of a deal.
Which is another thing that I think makes that scene with the confrontation between Marianne and Letty Mae, like, so much more satisfying, is the fact that, like, Letty Mae gets to see how Tara is when she is in the presence of somebody who cares about her and who is a real maternal influence on her life and just like right. see that change in her. Like that is just as satisfying as Marianne actually verbally telling her off.
And I agree. I definitely agree with that. I also just think Tara has somewhere safe to sleep for basically the first time in decades, if not her entire life. I mean, we saw her very young being chased by Letty Mae to Sookie and Jason's house. Like, I can't imagine the relief of getting a full night's sleep after like years of not it, and having, you know, not just the high thread count sheets that she surely has, and the Egyptian cotton towels that she gets served,
that she doesn't need,
but just
and it's being taken
definitely
care of.
Doesn't need right there
instead yeah. of being the yeah. caretaker constantly. It's somebody taking care yeah. of her for once.
Yeah, and so the weight off her shoulders totally mm-hmm. explains why that defensiveness that we saw particularly early season one is diminishing. It's not gone, but it's diminishing, and mm-hmm. the vulnerability is increasing. Which, of course, is exactly what Marianne wants, but that's yeah. a different point.
We're not another ready thing for that conversation.
Another thing, I that know. Marianne, another thing that Marianne wants is for Eggs and Tara to get together. Like, she's
a shipper queen, man.
Basically, she punches out Carl because he interrupted them with the towels. Nobody needs
Marianne.
Marianne's on AO3, like typing away right now.
Oh,
Tara and Eggs, five ever.
Yeah, I think five that ever. Like all the flirting between Tara and Eggs is really cute. Like, I love that mm-hmm. I like noticed his hand on her thigh, and then he
Me
makes
too.
Like a cutesy little comment about it. I'm like, good mm-hmm. for you. But I'm sorry to that man. Like, you cannot go to a bartender at their job and be like, "Give me a drink, something sweet," and actually mean a kiss. It is too fucking much.
Like, I also sir. Like I forgot that that's what happened, and I'm like, ew, he drinks sweet cocktail, like sweet drinks, like what's wrong with him? Because I like don't like to have sweet drinks, really. No shade
I
on anyone that
am
likes
more
sweet
thinking
drinks.
That I'm more thinking that this is a metaphor for the cheesy way that the rest of this show is about to start going. However dark there might be elements of.
And like, to be honest, I actually do think that actor does a good job with that line, but it just like, I cannot.
It's a horrible
I
line.
Cannot accept it.
It would ick me. It would ick me out a little bit.
Yeah.
Unless the person
if I was
said
Tara,
it.
I would be like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I was just going to say, I think in the hands of somebody else, it would be like so much worse. But because mm-hmm. he is played by this actor, and he is very kind of effortlessly charming and looks the way that he does, like it makes it a little, that pill is a little bit easier to swallow. But yeah, that yeah. is, it is a lot. I would be like, I'm like 30% less interested now.
I was just going to say, the only way that line would engross me out is if someone said it obviously joking. Like, yeah. I can yeah. deal mm-hmm. with, like, corniness like that if it's, like, a total obvious joke.
It's, like, ironic,
and then we just
yeah.
giggle. And then, yeah, exactly. And then just giggle afterwards. But if someone said that to me seriously, I'd be, like, I'd probably
like, it's
vomit
their
on them.
First kiss, sir.
I mean, does he think he's Bruce Campbell in Army of Darkness? Or what's going on here?
I haven't seen that movie, unfortunately.
No,
well,
neither have
spoilers
I.
Spoilers for Army of Darkness. Okay. Topical references, Lozzie edition. Anyway, anything more to say about Tara Eggs and Marianne within that context, at least? We can move on to Marianne in other contexts.
Yeah.
Marianne and Sam. Sam is a puppy.
He's going
a little
through
puppy.
It.
He was a very cute little puppy.
Just like a literal and figurative puppy.
Childhood. Well, not childhood, like teenhood. What's he, like 17?
Yeah, he is 17. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's explicitly called out to be 17.
Yeah.
So is Jessica, which I find interesting. It's like, you had adults right there. Like, 1 year, and there were, like, a lot less, you know, side eyes we would need to give the people in this show.
That's yeah. fair. 17's a good number.
What's the age? Sorry, what's the age of consent in the U.S.?
We're not gonna
because it's 16 in.
Oh,
the
I guess
UK.
I don't know where it
just
is in Louisiana.
Like...
yeah,
I didn't. I just assumed that like
it
was
yeah,
explicitly
it
like
states,
these yeah. people are of age, therefore you don't have to feel ick about it.
Well, I feel
like the age of consent in the UK is 16. So
I feel like normally it's 18.
And so in Louisiana, it's 17.
In Louisiana, it's 17.
But okay, so they are doing the 18-year-old thing. It's just like...
Yeah.
I'm still side-eyeing.
They're still towing that barely legal line.
Yeah.
In my brain, it's 18 anyway. In my brain, it's really 21. Like...
Right.
If you can't drink, we're not involved.
Yeah.
Yeah, if we're talking like an 18 and 19-year-old, whatever. If we're talking an 18-year-old and like 165-year-old... You know, maybe let's age that person up with just a couple years.
Follow the rule about like an age gap. Ever.
I am also a person that has definitely read entire series of like fairy smut where the dude is like 500 years old and the girl is 19. So like, you know, I'm not throwing stones in glass houses, but you know, it is what it is.
One thing I found interesting is because I felt like in the finale when Sam sees Marianne and starts freaking out and starts gathering all that money together, you get the impression he's like gonna run away.
Yes.
But in this episode, he tries to give her the money, thinking like he owes her money. And she's like, that's not what I'm here for. What made you think this is about you? And I'm like, she literally just said to him in the last episode, like, you didn't think I wouldn't find you, right? Like, that would make me think it was about me.
Sending some mixed signals there, Marianne.
Valid. Very valid point.
Well, she's definitely got him sweating because he's having flashbacks to his young life throughout this whole episode. So we're getting like their backstory, how they met. He was a puppy, broke into her house.
Through the puppy door.
She vibes
lost his virginity. Lost his virginity. He stole her money. She does vibe him. That is an intense first sexual experience.
It's so creepy in so many ways.
Yes. I gotta give young Sam some points for continuing to try to steal from her after this because, like, he is terrified. But he's like, I gotta get out of here, and I gotta get out of here with the bag.
Unfortunately, here's a drawer full of money. I mean, like, because that's where people keep their money.
I love when he's like, what the fuck is happening? And she says, baby boy, you're not the only thing special in this world.
Ooh,
okay.
I
props to Sam for like hearing that and getting the fuck out because in that kind of vulnerable position that he was in, I feel like it would have been much easier to stick around.
I mean,
I think that's the comparison to the position that Tara found herself in, and obviously the seduction is different. Between Marianne and Tara versus Marianne and Sam. But it's the same sort of rock bottom situation.
Sam is... Melissa, you have this in the notes and I agree with it. Like, Sookie is extremely ballsy and is like, can I leave early? Like, the shit's fucked up.
Can I leave early to go hang out with my boyfriend you hate?
Well, did she say it that way, or did he say, are you going to go see Bill? Because I feel
he
like...
He said it, but then she was like, yes, we had a fight, I need to talk to him, and he's
I agree, she goes too far. She goes too far when she, like, after he mentions Bill, but, like, he shouldn't have asked. But, like, also, just tell her no. Don't, like, be a dick about it. Be like, no, we really need you. And don't ask.
Also,
it's none of his business.
Sookie mentions that she really needs the job, and I'm like, why does Sookie really need the job? Like, I'm still not entirely clear why Sookie really needs that
job. She said before that she's like, oh, it really just kind of helps her feel normal or like keep some sort of like sense of something in her life, but which I get, I guess, but like, then how is it doing that if you're still like running off to see your boyfriend whenever anything happens? But yeah, I think that scene is kind of complicated because on the one hand, I do think Sam has been really fucking annoying about Sookie this entire time.
Yes. And I'm over it. Is no different.
But I also think that he has a point that he's like, you know, you need to stop coming to me with this crap. Like, you need to like he's kind of trying to very, very, very belatedly trying to build back up like some sort of wall of like professionalism between boundary. Them where it's like, I can't be. I thought it was like very poignant when he was like, I cannot be whatever you want me to be at any time anymore. Like, I just can't do that anymore, which is great. Boundaries, babes, let's do it. Created that situation in the first place. So that was like his own fault.
Right.
But I like to see that kind of Because, yeah, Sookie does, you know, she has kind of...
No, she takes taken
that
and
run with
Sookie
it.
Is,
yeah. I think my...
Sookie is totally complicit in that. Yeah. And he calls her, I can't be on your back burner, right?
Sookie, like, char my ass on your back burner.
I just think that this conversation... Better. I think my frustration is more like, this conversation needs to happen when, like, people are not angry. Like, they need to... I mean, it's never
and
going to.
Drinking out of the bottle.
Yeah, like, this... I think he's very correct. Like, he has every right. And, like, if I was him, I would want the same boundaries set back up. But, yeah, he's made it so he's can be the person that she's come talk to. But she definitely is, like, oblivious to it. But I also feel like just because someone was, like, a friends with you, like, doesn't mean that there could have been. I mean, I know they kissed and everything, but, like. It was clear that she got back with Bill after that. So I just feel like, I don't know. I don't even have an answer.
Yeah,
I need to have that conversation, mm-hmm. like, with a therapist, maybe.
Mediation.
Yes.
They shouldn't have done it in the first place. He massively overstepped. She encouraged it. There's complicity on both sides, but they're both... They should not work with each other anymore.
Yeah, probably not.
And they should... And they need to establish boundaries again.
Yeah, and I sort of think, I agree that the conversation needs to happen. I do think that because, like, they are at work, like, literally during work hours, I feel like Sam takes it way too far with how he's telling her off. But at the same time, it's like, if I'm Sookie, I would have never even talked to him about Bill again in my life. So on that hand, it's like, whatever you get is what you get, because Sookie just lacks any amount of awareness of how Sam... like is.
Yeah, she's not really mindful or thoughtful about his feelings.
All right, any more on Sam and Sookie?
No.
And Marianne?
No,
no,
no. No,
please, never again on Sam and Sookie.
Good thing that's over.
So, darling baby boy Jason.
No, baby boy's has found religion. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. Okay. Yeah. dumbass Jason and the church.
Thank you for getting it correct.
And we have our proper introduction to Reverend Newlin and his lovely wife, whose character has a name, but that character's name will be Anna Camp.
Have we even heard it yet? We did. I completely spaced it. Yeah, it's Anna Camp.
I mean, I know her last name is Newlin.
Well, oh yeah, the. I really loved the way that they took these newsroom debate scenes that were, like, background and made them explicit text of the show. And then it's, like, pop out Anna Camp, mm-hmm. like, production.
I'm just going to say it. I don't remember if we learned it yet, but her name is Sarah.
Sarah. Okay.
Mm, yeah.
Sarah Camp Newlin?
Yeah, Sarah Camp Newlin.
Yeah, she's just, like, my only note on this is just that Anna Camp is so good at what she does.
Mm-hmm.
She knows exactly what show she's in, and she knows exactly what character she's playing. And she's just she's eating it up.
Yeah, it's in her name. Like, she just, she's great.
But yes, Reverend Newlin, fresh off an interview or a debate, with Nan Flanagan on the news, apparently. is introduced to Jason, who has been reading the Fellowship of the Light of the Sun of the Children of the
Children of goodness, the Corn,
the Ring
literature.
It was his dad's book.
The book his dad wrote.
It was his. I did. Oh, sorry. Yes, Newlin's dad. I thought you meant Jason's dad.
Oh no, Newlin's dad wrote this book.
I was very confused.
With his highlighter, Jason was reading it with a highlighter.
And just another great, like, I mean, obviously evergreen statement that Hoyt is, like, the most precious of all things. While Jason is talking to him about this church stuff, and he's like, what's wrong with the church we have? Like, the way, you know, my church teaches me to be a Christian and not hate and not this. And Jason's like, oh, you're just stuck on the hate. It's like, because that's, like, the foundational, that's the foundational thing that religion is or that church is built on. But I love Hoyt just being always... like the voice of reason that Jason needs to listen to but never does.
Yeah. Hoyt lives with someone who is hateful and he knows it.
And he's still turned to, oh, what a precious baby.
Do you mean Hoyt or Call that just walked past Melissa's screen?
They're all precious babies.
I think it's nice that Hoyt and Jason are having these conversations. Obviously, Jason is not taking what we would hope from these conversations, but it is nice that they're processing.
Well, so the beginning of the conversation is about Renee,
yeah,
right?
That's what I was gonna say.
And Jason is like, he was my best friend. But it's interesting, like, sort of Hoyt goes along with, yeah, he was my best friend too, but then is prepared to push back on Jason on the fellowship stuff, which is good.
I did laugh kind of when Jason tells Sookie that about this conference that he's going to, he knows that if he tells her he's going to the Fellowship of the Sun Church, she's gonna like have a conniption basically. Mm-hmm. So he's like, I'm going to and he like sees a Marlboro thing. I'm the Marlboro Baptist, and I joke that church would be in North Carolina. That's where they make cigarettes. It's really good when you have to. It's good when you have to explain your own joke, just in case.
I love Sookies. Have fun at church camp.
I mean, you do have to explain it to me because I have no idea that Marlboro was in North Carolina.
A lot of the cigarette companies are.
Are they? Yeah, okay. All right. Well, you learn something every day. The fellowship is apparently bigger than hating.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
No. Anything that includes hate never, like, exceeds that. Nothing that includes hate ever is bigger than that.
Yeah, Melissa has written in our notes, nothing that includes hate ever is, and I can only hear that in her voice, having just taken a big hit.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to lie about what church camp you're going to, like, it's a bad church camp. It's like that age-old HR question. If you have to ask if you can wear that to work, you probably shouldn't. If you can't tell your sister what church camp you're going to, you probably shouldn't be going to that church camp. If you can't tell your mom where you're sleeping, it's probably not a good place. Like, all those things.
Those are usually good places, though. I support, you know, fibbing to your parents. In some instances.
There's levels.
I do love the, like, church people and their fucking leadership conferences. For the low, low price of $1,200, you can hate vampires professionally. I guess it's a good thing
that...
It's
like, we cover room and board and food. You just have to pay for your classes.
Yeah. Okay. And I'm just like, good thing that Sookie came across that inheritance money.
You mean I have to pay you for the shit you made up, and you're gonna pay for, like, the tangible items? I'm very confused. Like, what is Jason paying for? Yeah.
Enlightenment.
It's very unfortunate that Sookie's, like, trauma inheritance ends up being Jason's sign from God.
Yeah. I said if I was Sookie, I would probably keep that money and do all the things that Uncle Bartlett hated with it.
Exactly. There's that.
Like,
or
being a
she
good
really
person.
Feels gross about, if she really feels gross about keeping it, then fucking donate it to, like, a child protective, like, some sort of organization. That,
especially because,
you know,
she doesn't explain to Jason.
Exactly.
Yeah, like Jason doesn't understand, I don't think.
Well, Jason's first reaction is, why didn't he give it to me?
I mowed his lawn.
Which is like, okay, right, that's what inheritance is.
And, like, I guess it's Sookie's trauma, so she can do whatever she wants with it, you know, tell or not tell whomever she wants. But it still does feel, like, really frustrating when she has decided to just kind of keep that to herself and not tell Jason what this piece of shit actually did. So she lets him go on thinking that he was a decent person. And I feel like that guy should not get to die with people out there thinking he was a decent person. But, you know, it's her business, and she doesn't want to share it, and that's fair. But, you know, I hate that people are going around thinking that he was just a fine and dandy, like, upstanding citizen.
I sort of hate that he was able to even leave this inheritance to Sookie, because, like, how dare you have, like, the ability to, like, re-traumatize this person from beyond the grave? Like, obviously, no one is going to, like, make laws saying you can't give money to whoever you want, because, you know, the common thought process is going to be like, well, who doesn't want money? And it's like these instances.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, people should get to consent to all the things, even when they're good, like, especially when they're good, like consent for sex and inheritances.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that she couldn't refuse it. Like, maybe she could. But yeah, it's still traumatizing having to have the conversation about it, right? Like, with the with the lawyer. And I think it's I can understand not talking to Jason about it, because I do not believe Jason has the emotional maturity to have that conversation.
He would definitely be one of those, well, he never did anything to me, like, people.
Yeah.
Well, he'd either be that, or he'd go off and be like, how can I fix it? How can I be big and strong and angry about it? And not, like, there's no way Jason listens to Sookie about it and is there for her. He's just not got that in him.
Yeah, I mean, you think about
it's like
when,
not believing it or making it about him.
Yeah, like when when everything happened with Renee, his first reaction was like, if he was still alive, I'd kill him. Like, so.
Yeah, I mean, Jason's fully turned over a new leaf. He's not drinking.
Yeah.
He's not sleeping around.
He's not going to bang randos. Yeah.
That woman was hot too.
The rando.
She was hot.
She was hot.
Hoyt wanted it.
She on.
Poor Hoyt.
No, too sweet for her. Wait, once a nice girl.
We don't know that.
Yes, girl. And her departure line is she doesn't teach.
Yeah,
she
I
absorbs.
I don't think someone that's like I don't teach.
Which
it's
like,
which,
I don't know.
Which I mean,
what does
if we think people can't? If people can't get away with saying I want something sweet and going in for a kiss, they definitely can't get away with saying I don't teach, I absorb.
The thing about this is, I don't know what that means.
Oh, it means she doesn't want to have to teach him.
I
how
know
to have
what
sex
that
with
means.
Her.
I know what that
the
means.
Absorbing. The absorbing.
Oh,
I took as
I want to learn.
Think
sex
of the grossest
from
and
the
that's
person.
What I took.
Yeah, like I want you no, to teach yeah. me things.
I was thinking absorbing in like a very literal sense, so that's where my brain went.
Oh, I definitely thought.
I mean,
like
I do get the sense, but here's that's all I'm saying is like the reason that this didn't like ping as cringe to me is because I was like a little bit like you don't talk.
It's
like
not
that.
Straightforward. It's just like a weird thing to say, but I thought it meant like she would want Jason to teach her something.
Mm-hmm.
He probably she's probably heard rumors about him.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think she's heard rumors. I think she's seen him have sex in random places in Bombay.
And I just feel like that one woman. Like, what woman it is like, you know, she's a hot woman. She's clearly available, but she is throwing herself. Like, she goes from Jason and then immediately turns to Hoyt. It's like, how about you? Like, I don't like the way this show writes these kind of, like, desperate women. You know, it feels...
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It feels very unnatural. It feels very...
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Just false, really cringy, and it feels just, I don't know, disrespectful somehow. I don't know. I don't like it.
I don't think that
I mean,
it's
nothing,
realistic.
Nothing is worse than... the woman throwing herself at Andy Belfleur in the season finale because he apparently solved the case by the fact that Jason walked in and confessed to a crime that he didn't commit.
Well, like, see, that I can buy more because I understand and can sympathize with, like, the competence kink thing. You know, like, some guy is powerful in this moment, or this guy has supposedly accomplished some big thing, and you think, oh, that's an accomplished, competent person. I'm attracted to that. I believe that over, I believe, like, twice now, at least twice now in this show, that a woman has gone up to Jason, offered herself to him. He's declined. She has then immediately just turned to the person sitting next to him and been like, how about you? It's like, man,
yeah,
people don't act like that, I feel like.
I agree. Although, Hoyt is a very sweet... very sweet slab of beef, but she also does immediately, as soon as he hesitates, she's immediately like, no, actually, no, walks away. Anyway, Jason has turned over a new leaf, and I'm sure he will never have sex again.
Yeah, Jason also has this conversation with Sookie about like what he learned from his relationship with Amy about how like if you're gonna love someone, you have to love all of them or it's not love. And like I honest to God thought for a second that Sookie was like going to take a life lesson from Jason saying this and like go to forgive Bill. And like I feel like the episode leans into that for like a while. And then you get this really good scene of like Sookie's face completely changing between her conversation with Jessica and Bill. But I am actually pleased that this show is not trying to have me buy Sookie taking like emotional life lessons from Jason.
I did like that he realized, like, I think that that is a good lesson, though. Like, I think he did love Amy regardless of her shittiness. And Jason just discovered unconditional love for the first time, I guess. I mean, unconditional love doesn't mean that you have to be with that person. You can just still love them from afar if they're not good for you.
Ah, Jason. Do we want to talk about that joke, or do we?
I just want to say that I hated the fat joke in this episode, and I hated that Arlene, Tara, and Sookie all laughed at it. I don't think we need to.
How it manages to be fat phobic and racist. Yeah, like, in one fell swoop.
Yeah, I mean, it felt in character that Arlene would say it, but it just felt so unnecessary to the episode.
Yeah, actually, that's something that because I listened to the first chapter of the book. And, like, I haven't gotten as far as, like, the show is yet, but there's, like, so much extra racist stuff that I'm like, this is not necessary at all. Yeah. So I feel like they're just doing some... It's actually toned down in the show, I think, but it's not great.
Okay. Should we move on to Lafayette?
Yeah.
Who is in a torture basement.
A torture basement?
He's seen better days, our Lafayette.
I mean, he doesn't know how long he's been there, and we know it's been 2 weeks, which is horrifying.
And what's even more horrifying to me personally, because this is a nightmare that I have, the, like, having to go to the bathroom in front of people aspect of this whole thing.
Bucket.
And, like, that's... I constantly have dreams where, like, I have to go to the bathroom or I have to shower, and it's, like, filthy, and it's, like, in front of people. And so this is literally my worst nightmare.
Yeah, it's, and then on top of, like, all of the obvious shittiness of it, he's then stuck with somebody who has been a homophobic piece of shit to him, and having to listen to him, like, confess his deathbed sins or whatever.
Yeah.
What's the word I'm looking for? Sorry. Like coddle him or support him in that moment where it's like...
Like, are we supposed to feel bad for him? Like, from because me? He might be gay, too? Like, I don't...
Yeah.
No, I hate that.
Yeah, it's... it's very odd, that section. So the redneck who Lafayette beat up is like, we should tell each other our worst things so that we can confess them, which is very clearly...
Lafayette's, like, not interested. Like,
Lafayette's like, oh, Jesus, if it makes you feel better to talk, fine.
Lafayette's immediately like, remember that time I punched you directly in the face?
Yeah. And the other guy's like, do you regret that? And he's like, hell no.
You fucking deserve it.
Yes, the rednecks... I have no idea what the character is called, but apparently he regrets that his friend's girlfriend crushed Coke can between her tits and then his head between her tits, and then his friend found them, and then he got thrown out the window, and then he broke his hip, and then his hip got replaced with metal, and then his ass is magnetic, which was certainly a story. And then he apologizes for giving Lafayette shit for being gay, and then he admits he gave his mate a blowjob in a cabin when they were
received
in camp somewhere.
Yeah,
received the blowjob.
Oh, received. Yeah. Sorry.
I let my friend blow
it's
me.
It's still gay.
Yeah.
As soon as we saw this guy, I kind of was like, because we don't really know, like, what Lafayette's, like, locked up here for. So I was, like, my first thought was, I wonder if, even before I saw that guy, is, like, are they trying to figure out who killed those three, Leah, Malcolm, and Diane? And then we find out that it is one of the things on the agenda, because that's what wasn't that what Eric was questioning this guy about?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when Eric goes to Merlot's in season one, he's like, we know when people have wronged us, basically, and that is then left mysterious,
right? Because we don't know if they think that he's just Lafayette, like, was selling V, or if they think that he killed Eddie or any of that. We don't know what they think.
Yeah. It does seem to be like a little collection of people that have in some way wronged vampires, which makes it interesting because there was one person that was in there that had like a bunch of, you know, Sharpie or something written all over their body. And it said like slut and stuff like that. And I'm like, what vampire is like sex shaming somebody or slut shaming somebody? You know, this is an interesting, like, I wonder what that person, it's probably never going to come up ever again.
Oh,
but I'm just so like, I wonder what.
I took it different that was like they caught that person mid kink of like just an extra character, but I didn't think like the vampire did that to him. I thought like that was just something he was doing in his own life, and that's like when they snatched him, he just had all of that writing on him.
Yeah, that's possible. I just, I thought it was weird because I connected it to, like, whatever he was in there for. So I was like,
right,
vampires out here, like, slut-shaming?
I don't believe it.
Seems out of character.
Doesn't, to be fair, it doesn't seem, you're right, it doesn't seem in character.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the redneck is planning an escape, and we see someone walking down the stairs ominously in shadow, and they emerge from shadow. And it's Eric in a barber's smock with his hair in foil because he's getting his color done. What a wonderful entrance. I am very upset that Pam isn't there. Presumably she's upstairs preparing the colors to be applied.
I love this little bit of vanity from Eric because like he's a natural blonde, right? Like they've that's pretty well established just based on his like heritage or whatever. But he's not blonde enough, according to Eric. Eric wants to be blonder, so we're hitting the bottle. And I love it. That for him. It's just a silly little vain detail.
So the redneck tries to escape, chucks a bit of silver cross on Eric's face. It is somewhat surprising to me that he still has that on him. Anyway, Eric finds this offensive, pulls it off of his face, and fully homps down on this guy.
That was awesome.
And that's our...
It's so extra. It's like old horror movie vampire kill. It is beautiful.
And I like that they show it a lot from Lafayette's perspective. We get to see bits and pieces
it's
of it.
It's in silhouette.
Like,
it's,
like Lafayette's horrified and there's blood splattering. It was wonderful.
Yeah.
More on that later. I guess I can confirm now that he definitely is the person that was supposed to die and he died in the book.
Yeah.
But obviously he's so beloved that they decided to have it be someone else in the show.
So that also means that like whatever else is going on with Lafayette in the show is not in these books. So we are one book down and already we are doing major divergence.
Yes.
Which, like, is great because we love Lafayette and want to keep him around. But I'm just saying this is a really long series and, like, Elise and I are reading these books. So we're going to see how it goes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a spoiler also, like, to say in the book when he's dead, they're like, does he have any family? And Sookie's like, he has a cousin. And, like, obviously that's Tara, but, like, they haven't talked about her. Like, she's not named.
She's named in the second chapter of the second book, but like there's no there's context for her, it's no relation to Sookie,
right? Literally,
so she like is a character, but
I started chapter two and then was like, oh, it's time to record. I'm going to pause now.
There are a lot of ways that the show diverges from the books in a lot of very smart ways, but I think one of the best decisions they made was to keep Lafayette around.
Yes.
It was one of the best
changes. And to have Tara be a bigger character. Yeah, I would say also.
Yeah, can't disagree with those. All right. Our final plot line then is Sooker and Bill and Jessica. Lots of secrets being kept and lots of revelation.
Sookie is so excited to go to Bill's house and get, you know, her first quiet moment of the evening. And you're just sitting there in the audience being like, there is a teenage vampire in there. She calls him daddy. It is not going to go how you think it's going to go. And I kept laughing like, oh my goodness. Like, Sookie was mad that Sam didn't tell her that he was a dog. Like, what is she going to think about this?
Yeah.
And she's pissed.
I mean, firstly, I can't hear Teenage Vampire without thinking Teenage Dirtbag by Wheatus.
Oh, but, God, I haven't thought about this song in forever. I was saying, Vampire, I feel like Sookie has more of a right to know about this than she did about Sam.
1,000%! That's what I'm saying. We saw how pissed she was over shit that wasn't her business.
Your boyfriend made another vampire? I feel like, okay, I'd want to know that.
I'm getting worked
And
up.
It was a direct result of what he did for her. Like, this does. Yeah. She's absolutely right.
He
does
slept with
her.
And killed a 17-year-old girl. I love that she says that after they've determined that there was. I love that she's standing in front of them like, what exactly happened? Give me the minutes and the timeline and every single thing, which is what everybody always does when they find themselves in a betrayal situation. And I love that even after Sookie and Bill or Jessica and Bill say that they didn't like have sex with each other, Sookie continues to say that they slept with each other because they did in the end.
Right. And literally, whilst that was happening, she was making out with Sam. Like,
that's true. I mean, also.
Well,
listen, we have established that Sookie has a very strong, like, lack of self-awareness.
I have a hard time. And, like, I know Bill's from 140 years ago, but, like, he's so shit at communication. He lies to protect people, which is not how you protect people. You don't protect people by withholding information from them. That is just not.
And it always feels like something he says to try to get out of trouble for it, because it really
it's more like, I didn't want to upset you.
He doesn't
want to
have
I don't think
an
you should
awkward
know.
Conversation, so he just is, you know, he literally and figuratively buries it and goes about his business. And then, oh God, the whole, when she's like, what else are you keeping from me? And like, man, you got to have a better poker face if you're going to be as sneaky as you are, because it's very clear, like, you know, who knows what else he could possibly be keeping
from
her, but it's definitely something.
And we find out many something in this episode.
Yeah.
Is this the end, Bill? Is this the end?
I have a feeling it's never the end with him and his sneaky secret keeping.
This would have been an incredible time for him to be like, actually, yes.
Do you have time? Would you like to
I killed
down?
Your uncle.
Mm-hmm.
But he just thought that was never going to come up, ever.
And then it comes up, like, the next day. Like, yep. It's ridiculous. I did really, I know I said it earlier, but I absolutely love Jessica's face and tone when asked if they slept together. Ew, old. And her face looked horrified. Like, she truly looks at him like, that could be my dad, and that's gross.
As a 17-year-old, I would also be like, no.
Okay, but do we also think she would have slept with Eric?
That's different. Though?
Yes,
that's not her daddy.
Eric doesn't act like a dad either.
Eric
he is sexy, mysterious, abnormally
he
tall
let her
man.
Feed on somebody, didn't he?
Bill is like, you know, stuffed shirt, boring dad.
I mean, Bill gave her a list of house rules
and talk shit about her outfit. He's like, I don't want you looking like a lady of the evening, and she's like, awesome.
A slattern,
like
which is
a
slattern. Word I had not known. I'm sure I looked it up last time I watched the show, but I didn't remember. I mean, you could tell what it means based on his tone, obviously.
It's a wonderful delivery, and like, again, such an incredible performance by Deborah Ann Woll on that response to that line, like. Awesome.
So while I do believe that both Sookie and Jessica need to know, like, should know why Jessica was created, I think that telling them how he did was horrible. He like did not think about the fact that either of them would be like upset about that. Like, obviously Jessica might resent Sookie now because of that, and Sookie is gonna feel like super guilty, and you can't control how those people feel about it, but like, just tell them
Don't well, because tell them that's in a group. Intentional. And that's like, that's what upsets me about it, is that he know, like, even though everything that he said was truthful, that it was as a result of him, you know, protecting Sookie, he said that in that way to absolve himself of any guilt in the situation, and then just firmly placed that in Sookie's, in Sookie's court, so that he can turn them, like, they can focus on each other and the damage that they have done to each other or whatever, instead of focusing on him, who was the catalyst of it, basically. He's the one who took, you know, or Eric is the one, really, that summoned Sookie over there. So, like,
they all made
Sookie
choices.
is as innocent as any bystander would be in that situation. That wasn't her fault, but the way... He framed it that way to, like, absolve himself.
I definitely agree with that. But equally, I mean, and Sookie's like, I shared every horrible corner of my life with you. What makes you think I couldn't take yours? I'm a lot stronger than you think, and it's a great, powerful speech. Or it would be more powerful if you didn't remember that he went away for a day, and she said, I'm in trouble. He went away. He wasn't there for me, so now I'm going to make
Bill
out with
Sam. Bill doesn't know that. So, that's not Bill's business.
Bill knows that she made out with Sam.
Oh, yeah, because he caught them, but he doesn't.
Yep.
Yeah, Sookie has like proven over and over again that she does not react the best when people do reveal their secrets to her. So, you know, a little bit of self-awareness on her part.
After being, like, so upset about everything that just happened, Sookie decides to start going through Grant's belongings. And I was trying to... I know Tasia answered me in our notes, but I was trying to figure out, like, how long it's been since Grant died, because the glass of water that is in Grant's room looks real fresh, and I feel like it would have somewhat evaporated over time and had, like, water marks on it.
Well, that, but, or, like, been dusty. Like, floaters in the water. Like, I thought immediately the same thing, is that water looked way too fresh.
Yeah, but it's, like, been about 3 weeks.
I would guess it's been about a month.
Yeah, since that makes Grant sense. Because Grant didn't die, like, at the end of the season. It was kind of in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
When Sookie goes back to, I guess, try to do better, like, have a real conversation with Bill, she talks so condescendingly to Jessica about, like, it's like she's talking to a, like, I mean, 17-year-old person is not an adult, but she's talking to her like she's a little child. Like, if you go to bed early so we can have private conversation, you and I can hang out tomorrow and get makeovers. I mean, she doesn't say that, but that's the tone.
She's talking, like, to her like it's one of Arlene's kids.
Yeah, exactly. If she had talked to me like that and I was Jessica, I would, like, I'd like pee in her bed or something.
I would do something really mean. Really well, being like, we didn't get off on the right foot. Like,
yeah,
that's not your fault. If you're going to be here, and I'm going to be here. Let's be cool together. And then, yeah, she goes into, like, condescending mode, and it's not great. But I do. I also sort of read that as, like, a little bit of a cover for, like, her real attitude that she has, because, like, the second Jessica's like, okay, Sookie's like, death stare.
Yeah. I think that if she started it with, like, you know, we haven't gotten off on the right foot, and then Bill and I have a lot of stuff to discuss, like, do you mind giving us a little bit of time? I mean, you know, Jessica's probably going to hear everything they say anyway.
Yep. Yeah.
But, like, because vampires have good hearing. But, like, just be straightforward. Don't, like, bribe her with, like, a girls' hangout. You don't even
know
each other.
That Sookie doesn't know that Jessica was an extremely sheltered girl. So it's like... Jessica probably does want to make up.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But you don't know that.
That came off the back of a really cool... there's been a few scenes where Bill is basically trying to get Jessica to try different types of True Blood.
Oh, yeah, I skipped all over that.
To work out which
that.
One
Sorry.
That she'll actually drink and she'll actually like. And it turns into a bit of a wine tasting. Like,
that was cute.
What about A negative? What about B positive? And some of those are like, that tastes... like ass, but less like ass than the other one. So
I think the one they like so land on, she's like, that's not as gross.
and then she works out on some sort of blend by the time that Sookie's coming.
It's a red blend. The scene at the end with Bill and Sookie is literally, the sex scene is literally insane. Like, they admit they're, like, as soon as Sookie hears, like, I love you, her pussy just opens up. It was like, I'm like, does she have like, is there like a button? Like you say, I love you. And then like a faucet of wetness comes out and he can just like slide right in. Like there was no, so. I mean, it's a TV show. So like, they're going to do it like that. But like, there was literally no foreplay. I'm like, what is happening?
I don't know why I didn't get stuck on this during the graveyard sex scene, but I literally had to nearly pause the episode because I was so distracted and lost in thought, thinking about like how important like foreplay is generally. And also, if you were having penetrative sex with someone who was like stronger than a normal human, it's like you would have to. You would have to.
They need lube. Like,
isn't it?
It just get some lube, please.
I just kept thinking about like the fact that these two people have real sex and have had real children from that, and I just kept thinking like, God I hope their children never watch this show, because they could just get like a perfect visual of how they were created. It was, I don't, my brain went that way, so
that's really funny.
I wish I had been thinking about lubrication.
I just want everyone to be comfortable.
If I ever have to watch my parents have sex, I hope I don't have to worry about them having lube or not.
And I hope it's shot in glowy, soft HBO focus.
I feel like if
with some nice violins in the background.
If I ever had to watch my parents have sex, I think I'd end up like Miss Jeanette at the beginning of the episode.
Or like Arlene's redhead daughter going.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Anyway, without the cut to the nightstand with a bottle of lube on it. Wait, I forget. Are vampires cold in True Blood or not?
Yeah, they are.
I think so, yeah.
She
so
talks about it in the book. At least in the book, like she says, like kissing him, his lips are cold.
Okay. All right. So cold, lubeless sex. It's a way to...
The cold thing always...
Everyone is disgusted with me.
I'm sorry,
Melissa's
face right now. She's horrified.
Yeah.
But wouldn't vampires be like room temperature? Like if it's cold outside and they're outside, sure they're cold. But if they're inside and it's...
Yeah,
cold,
and like
cold.
Oh, they're like lizards. They're body like, yeah. Feels cold.
Yeah.
Like initially, but you know, you get used to it like a pool.
Yeah.
And it's the South, right? Like, so it's probably quite hot. Like, they adapt to
it. It's probably reassuring to her. There's no she air conditioning in the old Compton house. Oh, I'll go just cuddle with Bill a little bit.
It's a human ice cube. Bill gives this big speech about, like, how Sookie's his miracle. And, like, you helped me discover something I thought was lost forever. And it's like, how did you end up being a fucking mainstream vampire if you were, like, whatever you're describing, like, pre-Sookie? It just doesn't make sense. It does not make sense.
Love bombing.
And Sookie's like, God, it works, though. God it damn works. You, Bill Compton.
It works.
I mean, they have...
Well, I was talking about this before we started recording, but it's, I mean... When you think about, because this is all very cheeseball and very exaggerated and heightened, and you are saying, you know, you're watching and you're thinking to yourself, like, how is Sookie, like, really just, you know, opening up metaphorically or literally at this, like,
literally
at this stuff? And it's like, it helps, I think, to remember that this is her first relationship. She's never really been able to date people. She's never been able to fall in love with anyone. So effectively, she is, you know, basically how any of us were at, like, you know, 16 or whatever, when the emotional maturity or the relationship maturity is just not there. So this all is new and she's just figuring it out. So hopefully she kind of learns to kind of raise that bar a little bit in the future.
I'm trying not to say spoilers for Sookie's future relationships in that case.
Yeah, I mean, we basically skipped completely over it, but, like, Sookie, it's nearly, like, terminal for their relationship that Bill also killed someone, like, at the first sign of her displeasure, which is, like, for me, it's, like, kill him. I don't give a shit, but Sookie had a problem with
Whatever. See, this is why I should never date a vampire or ever be in a position of power, because I'm like, yes, thanks. Good job.
Yeah, but, I also felt like...
Next on the list.
Yeah, I also felt like... I wouldn't be too upset if Uncle Bartlett was killed by my boyfriend.
Yeah.
Maybe we should be dating vampires. And then
so
all of our enemies will be smote.
The nuclear codes or anything like that. I will abuse my power.
No, but I now want to watch a movie where, or a long form television show where three people are dating vampires and they sort of collude to send them off on spy missions to assassinate people.
Hopefully the three people get to be really stoned while they give these directions to the vampires.
They're just like in the basement watching like
True Blood.
Kill that guy. And I want some fresh pineapple.
Like watching Seinfeld reruns or something, ordering pizza. And
I love we're saying there, like it's not the three of us.
1,000% us, yeah.
Right. On that wonderful note, anything more from the episode? Or should we move on to cliffhangers?
I think we're ready.
Our cliffhanger this week is Eric Eats a Redneck. We are not going to do season by season cliffhangers. We're just going to do one big old list. So where does everyone think this goes?
I love drama. And I love how heightened and campy this is. And for me personally, I would put it at number three, just because it's not super cliffhangery in the classic sense, but it is fun and I love it. Yeah. So.
I like it more than most of the things, so I'm fine with that too.
I'm good with that. Especially because that's sort of like the reasoning behind how we got our original number three. So, or not original, the current number three. So yeah, I mean, to find out that this is Eric's dungeon and like to see him do that kill, it's like very great. And as much as we were like, oh, I don't know, this episode kind of drags for a premiere, I am so ready for the second episode.
Mm-hmm.
Based off this.
Yeah, I feel like the one of the things with the cliffhangers is like, how hard was it to not continue?
Yeah.
And that it was pretty hard not to continue for me.
I think the scene is a bit longer than most of our cliffhangers. Yeah. Most of our cliffhangers are like quite short, and this one's quite a long one where we introduce Eric and Eric talks to Lafayette briefly and then there's a thing. So if you're literally just going on the last bit, which is him homping, then maybe it goes a bit further down. But if you include the whole scene, like we found out it's Eric, he's got foil in his hair, I think, yeah, I agree.
I mean,
it's up at number three.
For the foils alone, really.
Iconic Eric look.
Yay. I love it.
Yay, all right.
I also, did we phrase the title of this cliffhanger as Melissa wrote it in the notes?
I didn't write that.
Oh.
It doesn't matter.
It was in red.
Oh,
Who wrote this?
No, I think I wrote it.
Okay, well, you phrased it, Eric eats a redneck, and I just think that's pretty funny.
It's concise, it's accurate.
I mean, if you've got a better description.
No, it's perfect.
Let me know, because otherwise that's what's going on in the spreadsheet.
No, I think it's great. I just was hearing it in Melissa's voice, and now I will hear it in Lazzy's voice.
Okay, so character intros, we got more of Reverend Stephen Newland, and we got more of, well, we got something at all of...
Anna Camp.
Sarah Anna Camp Newland.
Sarah
Anna Camp Newland. So what a wonderful set of intros we get. The sort of anti-Eric and Pam, I think.
Ooh!
Yeah.
I like that.
And
all insofar that they're, like, married and... I don't think that Pam and Eric are romantically involved, personally.
We don't technically.
It
know
remains to be seen
Steve
how romantically
Sarah
involved.
Are romantically involved.
I just
because
well, that's
yeah,
fair,
church
but
married.
I just meant like, yeah, okay. Outwardly, at least they act as if that.
To be determined at a later date.
Do we have anything more to say about those two? Or
all I will say is that, in my opinion, marriage should be romantic. Details. Or is better if it's romantic. Obviously, people get married for all different reasons, and I am not here to judge anyone. I hope that they love each other. We'll see later, I'm sure.
I'm sure nothing will come in between their marriage. What's most chaotic?
It is the look of chaos and plotting and scheming that is in Sarah Anna Camp Newland's eyes when she hears Jason say that he uses his brain to think.
Yes, Jason's like, I think I have a purpose, and Sarah Anna Camp Newland's immediately like, yeah, I'm gonna start thinking about that purpose.
Yeah, you can tell kind of immediately that she's the brains behind the operation.
Oh, totally.
Yes. While playing that perfect role of like the arm candy wife, and I love that for her.
Well, whilst Steve is doing his TV interview, you can all like I had to check a couple of times because it almost looked like she was mouthing along mm-hmm. with the mm-hmm. lines that he was saying, and I was so almost like a puppet master. And then when he comes off, she gives him sort of feedback on ways to improve. So yeah, she's you know, another wonderfully fully formed character landing on our screens, similar to Jessica.
Yeah,
I think that Andy is the most chaotic of the episode for me. He's extremely drunk and he's acting foolish the entire episode, and he literally has no control over himself at all. Like, he can't help but try to solve this murder because I guess he wants to prove that he wasn't involved. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot more wrapped up because he was wrong the last time with Jason.
Mm-hmm.
I've said this before, but I think he is just absolutely like the last kind of person that you want to be in that position of power, of like law enforcement, of cops, which is not a great institution to begin with. But, you know, the reason is for people like is because like Andy who want to abuse that power. And like now it's just escalated because now he's also drunk and he's just pointing his finger everywhere. And it's just, you know, he's going into a place like not even, you know, he's probably not even on the clock, like not even really in the in the position of like his job, going around interviewing people like as a detective while they're eating. Like he is just running roughshod all over these rules that are supposedly in place to like protect people.
And I don't think that even if it's like done against the rules, like I don't think that that police department like wants, like Bud doesn't want him doing that. So it's like
mm-hmm.
it's against the rules, but also against like the actual rules that they follow, that they're supposed to be following, because I do think that police break the rules all the time. But like this feels like even his boss would be like, "What is like, what are you doing? Please stop."
He's a loose cannon.
I mean, he very clearly has massive personality issues that are tied up in his sense of self and how he uses being a detective to sort of embed that. But yeah, like there's a wonderful bit where Bud comes back from having won a line dancing competition.
Yes, I love that.
Which is just a beautiful little character beat that they don't go, they don't explain, they don't overdo it, but they just like it's just there in the background. And yeah, so Bud is like, "You're overworked and you're drunk," and Andy's response is, "I am not overworked."
He didn't comment on that drunk. I do like that bit with the line dancing because it makes the world feel more lived in. There's things going on we don't see, and people have lives outside of when they're on camera.
Yeah,
I think it's really good writing, actually. That like just adds, there's no need for it, but it just adds a little bit of depth to the character, a little bit of breadth to the world. They don't need to focus on it, they don't need to go into it too much. Really
right, it's a good example of like trusting your audience.
Yeah.
All right, so my original thought was definitely Andy because he is a complete agent of chaos in this episode. But yeah, I'm gonna have to go with Eric's hair foils, just because that is also kind of a little character detail that, again, we don't really get a lot of. Nobody explains it. But he is there in hair foils, clearly trying to be blonder, because that's just something Eric wants to do.
Yeah, and I've got Jason reading. I initially thought it was the Bible, but I think it's actually Steve Newland's dad's book with a highlighter. And then just rolling over into the seemingly still slightly damp spot where Amy was murdered.
I was like, has he changed the sheets?
Has he changed the sheets?
She was literally murdered in that bed. The amount of times people in the show are just like totally okay with rolling around on like dead people's beds where they died. It's weird. If I had a nickel, like I would have like 3 nickels. It's not a lot, but it's still more than it should be.
More than you should have.
Yeah.
I would have 3 nickels.
Raising the roof for Tasia's meme.
I love that.
All right, who is most horny? I shall go first. Like Bill and Sookie, obviously, given that we saw given that there is a faucet going on in under Sookie's sundress, Bill and Sookie to me are most horny. They're, like that is a full on. Softcore porn scene.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
At the end of the episode. It's quite remarkable.
Yeah, there's definitely a little bit of Skinamax going on.
I'm going to pretend that this scene, this thought didn't come up because there was a minor involved. Or while there was a minor, not because, let's fix that. While there was a minor involved, but, like, I'm literally watching the scene where Marianne is, like, fucking and she's vibrating. And I was like, I want to know. So basically me thinking about how it would be fucking Marianne while she's vibrating. I'm so curious.
Does she need to be plugged in? Is she battery operated? Like, what's the logistics here?
She probably just recharges with sleep, like the rest of us.
Yeah.
Mine is Terry Belfler sniffing Arlene's hair.
After he did the nicest thing for her, by the way.
I know. Mm-hmm. And he's rewarded with a big old hug and a big old hair sniff.
He deserved that sniff.
He does. He loved it.
Yeah, I'm gonna co-sign Lozzie's choice because it is so extra. It's so cheeseball. It is just the most, this is like harkening back to Sookie running through a graveyard in a white dress for Bill to ravish her. Like, it is just, it's so campy. I love this very stupid show.
whilst his daughter listens in upstairs. Yes.
She's got vampire ears. Like, there's no way.
She can't help herself.
All right. Any book spoilery stuff people want to mention? Like, we didn't mention this, but we also briefly meet Daphne as a potential new waitress. I'm pretty sure she's a Marianne person, right? And that Marianne killed Miss Jeanette.
Mm-hmm.
That was the heart rip out thing, right?
I think yeah, that's Marianne. Daphne is also definitely Marianne, and it's a fun little Greek myth reference because we find out, you know, eventually that Marianne is a maenad worshiper of Dionysus, I believe, and Daphne is another fun little hint at that connection there with her name.
Doesn't she feed the heart to Tara and eggs in like a pie or something?
I think so. There's a lot of people eating hearts also in this season,
and then banging.
She's also she references the painting of Pan with a human lover, and aren't we all the human lover of Pan?
I mean, maybe some of us. Damn, I can't get a text back from that motherfucker.
You just gotta get some pipes, man.
All of these jokes are going above my head. Don't explain it to me, but I'm just like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I don't
Greek
know.
Greek mythology was my Roman Empire.
Oh, okay. I don't know a lot about Greek mythology at all.
Elise is on her I Claudius.
Yeah, I'm on my
now, so
I'm on my Roman
Greeks.
Empire shit right now. I'm watching I Claudius and listening to a related podcast. But yeah, Greek stuff like confuses me. Although we learned it in high school when I took Latin, they like told us about Greek mythology, which makes no sense because if you were going
it's
to learn
same.
About I just felt like
the Romans took all of their mythology from the Greeks and just renamed everybody. It's all the same. All
right. It still would have been, I guess we should have learned both versions of it then. But I tried to get my Latin teacher to call me Medusa and he refused and said that my Latin name was Julia instead. So in the book, Andy is drunk because of some other reason as of now. Like, he's on a case, he like is working on a case where someone had been sexually assaulted or raped, and he's just like upset about it. So like the body's still found in his car and he was drunk, so like he couldn't drive it home.
That looks like a panther.
He is a panther.
The only other difference also is that what's it called, Sookie finds Lafayette when she's alone. Obviously, Tara's not really a character yet, or I don't know at all.
Really,
and
ever, I don't think.
Andy had already, like, gone home. His sister had already picked him up, I think. So she was by herself. The other thing is it's specifically mentioned that Terry's in his late 50s, because he's a Vietnam veteran in the book, not a veteran of the, like, Iran... Iraq war.
The second Gulf War.
Yeah, that's really all.
All right. Time for some plugs, Melissa.
Yeah, I'm on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Mellow Yellow.
You can find me on Blue Sky at Lozymandias. You can find my podcast, Asimovcast, looking for joy and inspiration in the works of Isaac Asimov. I should be, around the time this is coming out, I should be starting season two, where I talk about the stories in the Foundation books that are covered by the first couple of seasons of the show, which Melissa and I recently talked about on the podcast as well. Yeah, that's me. But you can find that at Asimovcast on platform.
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storycraft at Chicken Tendi. That's T-E-N-D-I. You can find my other podcasts, Pod Wraiths, a Deep Space Nine rewatch podcast, on Twitter, Blue Sky, and Instagram at Pod Wraiths. That's W-R-A-I-T-H-S, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
And you can find me on Instagram at Ragey Cakes, and you can also find my YA book podcast, Act Ya Age, on Instagram, etc.
Oh, wonderful. That's the season opener done, guys. Anything else anyone wants to add?
No.
Awesome.
If there is, I forgot it.
All right. Thanks very much. Okay. Thanks very much to DJ Empirical for our theme, which is exactly as good as the theme tune to this show, i.e. it's fucking great. You can find the pod on Twitter, Instagram, and Blue Sky at FangbangersPod with a Z. Email us your chaotic horny thoughts on True Blood, please, to fangbangerspod@gmail.com. I'm Lozzy, and my blood type is wondering what it would be like to gaze into the eyes of someone so devoid of human compassion.
And I'm Melissa, and my blood type is feeding on guys with tattoos and nipple piercings.
I'm Elise, and my blood type is a lady of the evening.
And I'm Tasia. My blood type is 2 parts O negative and 1 part B positive.
I was like a little upset because I wanted to do that one.
I was like, yours, as soon as I thought of it, though, I was like, oh my God, write this right now before anybody else does.
bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.